There are two bad times to speak. One is before people eat, and the other is after people eat. Because either you're hungry or you're ready for your siesta. But I am so thrilled and privileged to be here, and every other adjective you can possibly think of. I am from the big city of Denmark, South Carolina, where we have three whole stoplights and a blinking light. And my mom and dad would always tell me that the two most important words in the English language are the words thank you, and they're not nearly said enough. I travel around the world and have an opportunity to speak in front of a bunch of audiences, but it's always good to be home because when I say stuff, a lot of times you all understand where I'm coming from. And down south, we always say that you should give people their flowers while they're living, amen? And I think that we should just take a brief moment here and recognize a couple of people. I was looking through the program and seeing some familiar faces. I spend more time up here than people, I believe, know. But one of the pillars of this community and has been a pillar of this community for a very long period of time. And it was good to see him today and to hear his words. And I think we need to give him another round of applause. It's none other than Mr. Kellogg, who sits with us today. I also know how difficult this task could be, particularly if you're a woman trying to navigate this space, raising money and balancing your board of trustees and providing the services that are necessary for a community. But Ms. Karen has done it with a level of grace, a level of beauty and intellect, always giving you just a calm, steady hand and a glare when you need it. But I want you to stand up and let people see you and shower you with the praise that you deserve today. Also, I know that there are a lot of elected officials in the room, and I always tell people that elected officials and pastors, I know I'm going there, but elected officials and pastors are very unique in this one very fashion, and that they are the only two professions where people expect more from you than they expect from themselves. And usually when we see our elected officials, we want to castigate them or chastise them for something that they have not done. And very rarely do we simply say, thank you for the long hours and the meetings and giving up time with your families just to do that thing we call public service. So every elected official, please stand up so we can give you a round of applause as well. And I see my good friend Annie over there. She made the trip up 77, probably took some back roads here from Fairfield, but she has been an amazing add to the South Carolina General Assembly. But I do want to say a special word to my cousin by marriage. I'm very clear about that. He was related to my wife. But I love John King. And the reason I love John King is because whether or not you agree or disagree with John King, he is always going to approach you with a level of honesty that many times we don't have in this American political system. John is someone who, when he dies, people will remember him as never being afraid to speak truth to power. And I think in his own district, I wanted to be able to give those words to him in his face and simply say thank you for your service. So today, it's hard to have events like this during the middle of the week because people have other things to do and want to get places, but we want to take time and recognize this 60 years of service. Even more importantly, I want to treat you all today a lot like Elizabeth Taylor treated all seven of her husbands. And that means I'm not going to keep you long. But as we sit here remembering this landmark, it put me in the mind frame of someone who was around in 1965. And it's someone that I don't quote often because I hate the way that we've whitewashed and bastardized his legacy. But I oftentimes think of Dr. King. And when I travel, I very rarely quote King because people like to think of King as being some docile individual when he was truly a rabid revolutionary. They treat King like he died in his sleep when he was taken away from us in the most visceral way possible. But Dr. King, in one of his best pieces of writing, it was unique. He talked about this question that we're going to answer today. He asked the question, it was his second best piece of writing. Now, his first best piece of writing was it's not the I Have a Dream speech. We can fight after this. His best piece of writing was the letter from the Birmingham jail. His second best piece of writing was this small book entitled, Where Do We Go From Here? And in that book, he gave us two choices. He said that we could either have chaos or we could have community. And think about that and the relevance of understanding that and asking yourself as we look forward to the next 60 years, what does this organization, what does this look like? It looks like either chaos or community. And I frown upon the I Have a Dream speech as well because I didn't think it was really the best oratory. It was kind of put together in a weird fashion. In fact, many people don't know this, but Dr. King had actually given that speech a couple of weeks earlier in Detroit, Michigan. But when he was giving the I Have a Dream speech, he looked out on the crowd in Washington and saw that the crowd wasn't really moving. And King was really good at knowing his audience because he was a Baptist minister. And the crowd wasn't really swaying. And then he had this booming voice from behind him, a young lady named Mahalia Jackson, that said, tell him about that dream, King. And that's when he got into that rhythmic cadence of one day. It's fascinating the history you can learn if they stop trying to take it away from you. But I digress. And so he began to go down this path of, I have a dream that one day we shall. But we get so caught up in that that we miss the most important part of that speech, which is also the context for my thoughts today. In that he talked about, Karen, he talked about the fierce urgency of now. And so as we ask ourselves, where do we go from here, understanding the history of this organization and the 60 years that it's been here, or the 60 years of Head Start, and we understand that we can either have chaos or community, I want us to operate with a level of urgency. I want us to understand that there is no more important moment than the one that we're in right now. Uniquely enough, history moves around us in such fascinating ways that I think we oftentimes forget that right here in South Carolina, we are in the cradle of progress. We stand on shoulders of greatness, heroes and heroines that actually provide and allow for this room to be just like this. If you look around this room is gorgeous. You got black and white folks sitting around, young and old and seasoned, a little older. You got people from the upstate and the low country. You got Democrats and Republicans. You got people who just came together for a singular cause and a common good under the sound of my voice so that we could figure out, while we celebrate, where do we go from here? And the reason that I think history is so fascinating is because I remember the stories of someone like George Elmore. Now, many of you all don't even know who George is, but George was so fair-skinned, he looked like John a little bit. And he could pass for being white, but George was a Renaissance Negro down in Columbia. He owned a five and dime store, he owned a liquor store, and he drove cabs on the side. And in 1948, George decided he was going to go register to vote. And George's story is funny because he went down to the Richland County Voter Registration Office and they actually gave George his voter registration card. But who are the nosiest people in all the world? You know who they are. Poll workers. I think in order to be a poll worker, the job description says nosy as hell. And when George showed up in August trying to vote, the poll workers looked at George and said, we know you're a Negro, you can't vote here. But George was filled with so much faith and audacity that he filed a lawsuit. It was known as Elmore versus Rice. And when he filed that lawsuit, they firebombed his liquor store, stopped distributing to the five and dime store. George Elmore's wife literally died in a mental health hospital right there on Bull Street. He lost everything financially, emotionally, and physically. But Elmore versus Rice is the reason that African Americans can vote in the primary system in the South. Think about the history you have right around you. When I think about Head Start, I remember that there would not be a Head Start if there wasn't an organization or individuals like Harry and Eliza Briggs. Now, how many of you all know who Harry and Eliza Briggs is? Okay, well, we got work to do. Harry and Eliza Briggs were just utterly amazing parents of young children in Clarendon County, South Carolina. The fascinating part about their story is that you know how your grandparents used to tell you how they used to have to walk uphill to school both ways? Well, a lot of times children, particularly in the South, would have to wake up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning just to walk to school. And Harry and Eliza Briggs said they wanted school buses for their kids in Clarendon County. And so they filed this lawsuit named Briggs v. Elliott. And the fascinating part about Briggs v. Elliott was that it got a rare unanimous opinion. Because Briggs v. Elliott was the first case filed in the landmark collection of cases known as Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas. Many people don't even understand the history of this great state, that Brown versus the Board of Education started right here in South Carolina. Again, as I said at the beginning, we are at the cradle of progress. And in Brown versus the Board of Education, they held that segregation causes a sense of inferiority by placing children in environments not conducive to learning. Think about that. They said segregation causes a sense of inferiority by putting children in environments not conducive to learning. And as we think about that and juxtapose that ruling that happened 70 some odd years ago, and we recognize that kids today still go to school where their heating and air don't work, where their infrastructure is falling apart, where we still have a corridor of shame, we have to celebrate the progress of institutions like this one and Head Start, but we also have to realize that we still have yet a ways to go. Keeping in mind the framework for this discussion when answering that question of where do we go from here is we can either have chaos or community. So I think about George Elmore and everything he paid for that right to vote. I think about Harry and Eliza Briggs having the foresight to simply fight for their children to have equal opportunity. And then I think about Sarah Mae Fleming. Sarah Mae Fleming is literally like top two greatest people in my eyes in the history of the world. She reminds me of you a little bit, Ms. Karen. She was so dope. She was a 22-year-old domestic worker. That's a funny way of saying she cleaned up. And she cleaned up hotels in downtown Columbia. And one day she got on a bus, but her sin wasn't, when the bus driver told her to get off the bus, her sin wasn't sitting at the front of the bus. Her sin was that she got off the front door of the bus instead of the back door. And back then, I don't really think anybody in here is old enough to remember that or live through this, but back then the buses were owned by SCENG. I don't know if some of y'all know that to be fact, but back then the buses were owned by the utility companies. And when she was going out the front door, the bus driver grabbed her by the neck and punched her in the stomach and rolled her down the steps. And Sarah's story is so fascinating to me because what I tell people when I challenge them is that, you see, Sarah wasn't looking to make history. Instead, history found her. And so, as I stand before you today, I am not necessarily as concerned. Y'all are going to get awards for the last 60 years. Walter, I'm not here to talk about the last 60 years. I'm looking at the next 60 years. And the reason that Sarah's story is so important and she wasn't looking to make history, but instead history found her, is because it reminds me of in the book of Isaiah. Now, if anybody's ever seen me drink tequila, they know I'm the furthest thing from a pastor. So, but I do know in the book of Isaiah, when he was in the full awe and glory of the Lord and the question was asked, who shall go for me? And Isaiah said, oh, y'all don't go to Bible study in Rock Hill. He said, here am I, Lord, send me. You see, Sarah wasn't looking to make history, but she said, here am I, Lord, send me. When you start organizations like this one, you're not looking to make history. You're saying, here am I, Lord, send me. When you are teaching in the classroom, you ain't there for the accolades. You're saying, here am I, Lord, send me. When you're in public service or an elected official, some of y'all say, here am I, Lord. Send me. And Sarah Mae Fleming joined with some young enterprising lawyers from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. And Sarah Mae Fleming laid the foundation in action and law for another young lady who sat down 18 months later named Rosa Parks. Just a dope, dope individual from right here in South Carolina. See, again, I remind you that we sit in the cradle of progress, answering that very fundamental question of where do we go from here? What does tomorrow look like? All I can promise you is that my hope for all of you under the sound of my voice is that your tomorrow is better than your yesterday. But we still have to figure out which one of these answers we will have. Will we have chaos or will we have community? And we can't help but to believe that we're on the brink of chaos. Whether or not you're reading the newspapers every single day or watching CNN, I sit in CNN at night, and most times y'all don't even know, I don't even have on, I just got on pajama pants and a suit top. And they got the little cry on under there, and I'm talking to somebody, and it feels like we're on the brink of chaos. Just in 3 weeks, John and I believe Miss Annie and I will all be down in Charleston. I think that a lot of you all don't even remember the time that we're in now, because we will be celebrating is not the right word. You use words well. I'm commemorating, remembering, memorializing the 9 individuals who were killed in Mother Emanuel. It's been 10 years. 10 years. But just think about how sometimes even in the cusp or the cradle of progress, it feels like we're on the brink of chaos. My story is one that's known, because my story is not my own. It's like I was talking to Miss Karen about her father, who is 90 years old and still preaching. Y'all still let him drive? Yeah. They say, yeah, but we just pray about it. I know how that is. Send her in there to take them keys. It is not going to go well. But our stories are not our own. Our stories are because of the shoulders that we stand upon. You know, my story is that the blood of my family literally runs through the soil of this great state. Because on February 8th, 1968, of course, my father was shot along with 28 others in Orangeburg, South Carolina. You see, that's not a distant history. That is, this Negro is still alive today. My mom was a part of the desegregating class of Hamilton High School in Memphis, Tennessee. That is not some distant memory. That is my mother, who is still alive today. And so the challenge for us all is that as we walk down this path, as we take these steps trying to make sure that we're building community, we have to remember those shoulders upon which we stand. It's okay to share the stories of George Elmore from Hopkins, South Carolina. It's okay to share the stories of Harry and Eliza Briggs from Clarendon County, South Carolina. It's okay to share the stories of Sarah Mae Fleming from Columbia, South Carolina. It's okay to remember Clem from Charleston. It's okay to remember Henry Smith and Samuel Hammond and Delano Middleton. See, we are in the cradle of progress. But sometimes it feels like chaos is all around. But see, the fascinating part about that is that Dr. King also talked about that only when it's darkest can you see the stars. Right? And some of you all have scripture confused. Now, again, I'm not a pastor. But I think that you all believe that there should be no chaos. I think that you all believe that there should be no strife. I think that you all believe that there should be no difficulty. I think that you all believe that there should be no obstacle. And the reason that you believe that is because you are faithful. Ms. Karen, this organization don't make it 60 years if you're not faithful, if you're not prayerful. But how I say that you have missed one of the most important messages is because he did not say that there would be no weapons. He just said that no weapons formed shall prosper. And so as we're taking this journey and we're recalling this and we're building community, understand that there are going to be obstacles. And there's going to be chaos. But even more importantly, you guys have to do one thing for me. So I am, I workshop things, and I'm gonna workshop things with y'all. I speak a lot, so I can do stuff like this at home. I go to Applebee's a lot. That's where I get away. And I go to the Applebee's on Garner's Ferry. And I love going to Applebee's because they pour their liquor like it ain't their own. You know what I mean? You know how you go to some restaurants and they just give you a little bit, or they put that one big ice cube in it and you got this much liquor in a whole ice cube. But at Applebee's, they just pour it away. And I was talking to my waitress the other day, a bartender the other day. And by the way, if you ever, it's an Applebee's near the Veterans Hospital. And let me just say, you have some of the most interesting conversations you'll ever have in your life. And interesting is doing some heavy lifting. And I was talking to my bartender the other day, and I said, "What year were you born?" And she said, "I was born in 2000 and I said, "Wait, there's more?" And so I began to think about young people who were born in 2000 and the fact that they've lived through 9/11, a housing crisis, financial crisis, the election of the first black president, the creation of the Tea Party, the re-election of the first black president. They've lived through Fort Hood. They've lived through a synagogue shooting. They've lived through the Charleston massacre. They lived through the election of Donald Trump. They lived through school shooting after school shooting after school shooting, college shooting after college shooting after college shooting. They've lived through the precipice of World War III. They've lived through COVID. They've lived through the re-election of Donald Trump. They've done all of this under the auspices of social media, and they're still here. And they're still here. They've had generations of trauma in two decades, and they're still here. And so as we take this journey, I tell you that story because it's fascinating, because this generation has taught me something that I'll share with you. The most fascinating word we have in the English language is the word grace. And grace is such a unique word because grace is the only thing that we don't give enough of to others or ourselves. And so as we're giving this generation of young people the grace that they deserve, because some of y'all in here are worried about that Freaknik documentary coming out on Hulu. Y'all don't know if y'all are gonna be in it or not. That went over some of y'all head. But this generation has continued to persevere. This generation has continued to be successful. This generation has taught me about grace. And so as we're navigating the next 60 years, I want you all to just write it down on a sheet of paper and just ask yourself that very simple question: where do we go from here? And every single day, make it your challenge to build community, understanding that the most important thing we have is the grace that we bestow upon others and the grace we bestow upon ourselves. 60 years is a long time. 60 years of so many lives touched is a long time. But the challenge is, during this fierce urgency of now, we need every single one of you all now more than ever. And so I challenge you all and thank you for the last 60, but I ask you, what are you going to do about the next? Thank you, and God bless you all.
I just have to get them off pretty quickly.